divine souls. I've been talking to you in the last few speeches about the conditions of the path of bhakti and how one of the conditions is that we should not ask God for either bhakti or mukti. On the path of devotion to God, we're trying to attach our mind to God, and by attaching our mind to Him, we purify that mind. When our mind becomes fully purified, then we become qualified, or we become able to receive God's ultimate divine grace, which gives us God realization. Bhakti means worldly enjoyments. Although we do need this world, as long as we have a physical body, we have a need for this material world. We cannot deny the importance of the material world, but we do have to make a distinction that this material world is not here to give us eternal happiness. Only God can do that. Bhakti does not mean making use of the world. Bhakti means when you try to indulge your mind, trying to find pleasure or perfect happiness in this world. That is bhakti. So it's fine to make use of the world. As Jagatguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj always said, Yah sansar hamare upayog ke liye hai, hamare upabhog ke liye nahi. This world is here to provide us what we need for the maintenance of our body. It is not here for our sensual indulgence or for us to find happiness, because the nature of the world is not happiness. Happiness doesn't substantially exist in this world. It substantially exists in God. When we pray to God, we understand the goal of praying to God is to reach God. And we're going to do that by attaching our mind to Him. However, if while doing devotion to Him, we're doing it with this desire in our heart that, oh God, fulfill this worldly ambition of mine, then our mind is not truly in God, and we haven't correctly understood the goal of doing devotion. So this is why our scriptures and saints tell us, it's better not to ask God for worldly things when you do devotion. So don't ask for bhakti. And don't ask for mukti. This one we talked about yesterday. Mukti means moksha, liberation. If you ask for bhakti, you would continue your eternal cycle of being born and dying again and again in this world. So bhakti keeps you in the cycle of birth and death. Mukti releases you from the cycle of birth and death. So why not ask God for that? Because there are things beyond mukti. That's why. I explained to you briefly yesterday that if you receive mukti, then your experience is finished forever, because in the state of mukti, what happens is you, just the soul, leaves this physical body at the end of your life if you've attained liberation. You leave your physical body and you go and you merge into formless God. And you also leave your mind behind, because mind is a part of the material energy. So the soul without a body, without senses, and without a mind, does not know anything, does not experience anything, is not even aware of its own existence, let alone God's existence. So in this state of liberation, we actually experience nothing. So you can say it's like a person who's in a palace. He's in a beautiful palace that's outfitted with all the luxuries and enjoyments. And he's in an ornately decorated bedroom of that palace. And in that bedroom, there's a beautiful bed with silk sheets and velvet comforters and fluffy pillows. And he's lying on that bed and he's fast asleep. While he's in that deep sleep, is he enjoying what the castle has to offer? You might say, oh, sure. Look at what a great sleep he's having on that bed. Okay, but if you compare that person to someone who just was really tired and happened to fall asleep out on the street or on a park bench, that person also may enter into deep, dreamless sleep, sushupti avastha. The one lying on a park bench who's in deep, dreamless sleep and the one who's lying on that bed in that palace, once they're both in deep, dreamless sleep, what's the difference? There's no difference. If that person wakes up, the one who's in the palace, and he starts enjoying everything that castle has to offer, then you can say, okay, he's got more enjoyment than the person who's got nothing. But when he's asleep, there's no difference. So you can say, oh yes, I merged into God because I got liberated. You merged into God, but you didn't experience God because you have no mind with which to experience. So it's like the salt doll who dove into the ocean to measure the depths of the ocean, and the moment it entered the ocean, it dissolved. The only difference is, for us, when we merge into God, we don't cease to exist. Some people think, oh, you become God. And in fact, there are statements in our scriptures like, Janat tumahi hoi jai. In the Ramayana, Tulsidas ji says, O Ram, the one who knows you becomes you. The Bhagavatam says, Bhagavatvaya kalpate. Prahlad ji says, once you surrender to God, you attain him, you become Bhagwan. Brahmavid brahmaiva bhavati. Once you know Brahm, you become Brahm. There are statements like that in our scriptures. However, as I explained to you yesterday, this is just apparently. Apparently, the soul that attains liberation ceases to exist because that soul merges into formless God and loses its personal identity because your body and mind are finished. They were material. So apparently you don't exist anymore because no one can see you and you have no activity. You're just existing in an inactive state. However, substantially speaking, you can never cease to exist. So you did merge into God, but you did not cease to exist. So you cannot become God. A soul is always going to remain a soul. However, just because of how it appears, at places our scriptures say, when a soul attains God, that soul becomes God. But actually, Veda Vyasji has clarified that from one point of view, the soul becomes like God. Bhoga matra samya lingacha, Brahma Sutra. God has unlimited sat, means everlasting life. Unlimited chit means unlimited knowledge and unlimited anand, infinite happiness. So he gives his unlimited sat, chit and anand to the soul who attains him. So in that way we become equal to God. However, jagad vyapar varjam, Brahma Sutra. Veda Vyasji says, God does not give you the job of doing srishti. And for that, you should thank him. Think about all the work God does on behalf of the souls who are still living here in this world, who have not yet attained him. He has to manifest the universe by activating Maya, become omnipresent in Maya, keep residing in the heart of every soul and keep noting down or keeping track of every thought of every soul, uncountable souls in this endless universe for every moment. He's keeping track of the whole thing, and then he's giving them the consequences of their actions. So you should be grateful to God that even after God realization, he doesn't give you this task. God takes care of all of that because he's God. And after God realization, a soul just enjoys the divine bliss and divine knowledge and everlasting life. However, they only enjoy that if they have not attained moksha. If they've attained moksha, did they also enter into Satchidananda Brahma? Yes. But do they themselves know that now they have unlimited Anand? They're swimming in the ocean of Anand? No, they do not know it because they have no way of experiencing. We could attain something beyond that. You see, in Vishnu Puran, it's told, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyakhya Tatha Para Avidya Karma Sangyanya Tritiya Shakti Rishyate. That God has three main powers. Those three main powers are called Parashakti, Jeeva Shakti, and Maya Shakti. Jeeva Shakti means all the uncountable souls in existence. Maya Shakti, the material power that this whole physical universe is made of. And Parashakti means God's supreme power. It's also called Chit Shakti. Krishnera ananta shakti tate tin pradhan. Chit shakti, jeeva shakti, maya shakti naam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ji also says, God, although Shri Krishna has uncountable powers, yet three are main. Chit shakti, his personal power, jeeva shakti, all the souls, and maya shakti, the material power. However, he goes on to say, Sat Chit Ananda Krishnera Swarup Ataeva Swarup Shakti Hoyatina Rup. This personal power of God, which I've referred to as Parashakti or Chit Shakti, it's also called Swarup Shakti. Swarup Shakti Savar Upare. This Swarup Shakti of Shri Krishna is his personal or internal power, and it is his most important power. It's the supreme power. So he says, since God is Sat Chit Anand, so his personal power is also Sat Chit Anand, or it has these three aspects. Sadanshe, Anandanshe, Ladini, Sadanshe Sandini Chidanshe Samvit Tare Gyana Karimani. Here Mahaprabhu ji goes on to say that this Ananda Ansh, this Anand aspect of his personal power, is called Ahladini Shakti, the power of bliss. The Sat aspect of his personal power is called Sandhini Shakti, the almighty power. Through this power, God is omnipotent. And the Chit aspect of his personal power is called Samvit Shakti. Through this, God is all-knowing. So, to review, God has three main powers: his soul power, his material power, soul power being Jeeva Shakti, material power being Maya, and his personal power, Swarup Shakti. This Swarup Shakti has three aspects: Ahladini, Sandhini, Samvit. the power of bliss, the almighty power, and the power of knowledge. Out of those, the Vedas say, ta swahladini variyasi radhiko panishad. Out of all of those powers, ahladini shakti, the power of bliss, is supreme. However, it doesn't end there. Ahladini shakter paramasar taro prema nam. This ahladini shakti also has an essence. That essence is called prema. Prema is the power of divine love. So now you understand that out of all of God's powers, His personal power, Swarup Shakti, is the most important, the supreme. That Swarup Shakti also has an essence. It's called Ahladini Shakti, the power of bliss, which also has an essence, which is called Prema or Prema Shakti. That is the power of divine love. And this Prema Shakti is also called Bhakti. This is the topmost power of Supreme God. There's nothing beyond this power of divine love or this Prema Shakti. That is the ultimate goal of a soul. A soul can actually reach to that level, but not if they ask for Bhukti or Mukti. If you ask for bhukti or mukti, you don't get that. That is why when Bhagwan Ram asked Kagbhushundi, look, I'm going to give you whatever you want, ask for a boon, he told him. So Kagbhushundi didn't ask for the material yogic powers, he didn't ask for wealth, and he wasn't even interested in liberation. He said, I want avirala bhakti, vishuddha bhakti. So what is that Vishuddha Bhakti? It is not the bhakti we do. I mentioned this to you yesterday as well. The bhakti or the devotion that we do is called Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana means something you do to attain a goal. So in Sadhana Bhakti, you try to attach your mind to God. By practicing sadhana bhakti, you enter into a more natural state called bhav bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means you really have to make a lot of effort to bring God into your mind, and your mind keeps wanting to go back to the world. However, eventually through this effort, your mind starts to purify and get attached to God to the point that it becomes more natural. Your mind is becoming naturally attached to God. And you start to develop more feelings for God. This is called bhav. So this state is called bhav bhakti. You practice sadhana bhakti. Eventually, by doing devotion in that way, you enter into bhav bhakti. This bhav bhakti, you continue to... This experience of bhav bhakti continues to expand until you reach the state of total heart purification. And when you reach that state, then through God's grace, through the grace of a God-realized saint, you can receive siddha bhakti or avirala bhakti, as Kagbhushundi referred to it. So God can give us His topmost power. But you have to aim that high. If in your devotion, the desire you have in your mind is for bhukti, God give me this worldly thing, give me that worldly thing, then that's all you'll receive. If your desire is for mukti, well, Krishna is very happy to give mukti. Muktim dadasi karhi chit smana bhakti. Yogam Bhagavat. Vedavyasji says in a playful way that, oh, our Shri Krishna is very kind, however, he's a little hesitant to give away his most prized thing. What is his most prized thing? That prem. He's quick to give away mukti. Muktim dadasi. No problem. You want mukti? Okay, no problem. Is it Kagbhushundi, I'm so pleased with you. Here, have moksh. Have mukti. Kagbhushundi says, no, no, no. I want the thing you have hidden away. Your prem. Why do you want that? Because you yourself have said, Shri Krishna, aham bhakta paradhino hyasvatantraivadvija sadhu bhirgrasta hridayo bhaktair bhakta jana priya. Shri Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that I become subservient to my bhakt. Who is a bhakt? You might say, oh, I'm a bhakt. I do devotion to Shri Krishna. No, the true bhakt is the one who has received that siddha bhakti from Shri Krishna. He's received that divine power, the innermost, topmost, supreme divine power. The one who has received that power of bhakti is a bhakt. Shri Krishna says, I become subservient to that bhakt. So if you want to be the closest possible to Shri Krishna, then don't ask him for bhakti or mukti. Ask him for his divine bhakti. To get that divine bhakti, you have to practice devotional bhakti, sadhana bhakti. And if you do with that desire to receive his divine bhakti, then upon complete surrender, he will grant that to you. Anubrajamyaham nityam puyeyetyanghrirenubhi Bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says, I follow behind my bhaktas, the ones who have received that divine bhakti. Why? To receive their foot dust on my head. Such is Shri Krishna's feelings, that he even desires the foot dust of his devotees who have not asked him for anything. They didn't ask him for any bhakti or mukti. They said, we want your bhakti. So we should also be that intelligent. We should be that well-versed in the spiritual understanding, the tattva gyan, that we know, oh, I should ask Shri Krishna for his bhakti. But what about mukti? Maybe someone is thinking, that sounds great to receive the topmost divine power. But I also don't want to be born in this world anymore. I've suffered enough. The two go hand in hand. What I mean is, if you're rich, do you have to worry about getting rid of your poverty? If you become healthy, do you have to worry about getting rid of your disease? No. So if you've attained divine bliss, you are liberated from suffering. It happens automatically. Bhakti karati soi mukuti gosai anichit avat bariai. Tulsidas ji says, mukti comes automatically. Bhakti is so great that if you receive that divine bhakti, mukti comes running. So you don't have to ask for liberation separately. Mukti comes anyway, even if you don't want it, mukti comes. Katvam mukti rugasi bhavati kasmad kasmadiha shri krishnena deva bhavato dasi padam prapita. One bhakt sees, he notices outside his hut, he had a fence also, someone has entered his courtyard and come right up to him. So he looks and he says, Katvam, who are you? Looking at the person like some kind of intruder, someone I don't even know, has just come right in, almost into my house. Katvam, Mukti, I am Mukti. Mukti, what are you doing here? Where did you come from? Did I call you? No, you didn't call me. Then how have you come? Shri Krishna Smaranena Deva Bhavato. Oh, are you not a devotee of Shri Krishna? Are you not his bhakt? Yes, I am, so. Well, Dasi Padam Prapita. I've come desiring to become your servant. Because Shri Krishna is my Swami, he's my master, I'm his servant, but he follows behind you. He considers himself subservient to you, so I also wish to serve you. Mukti has come in form, in front of that bhakt, begging to become the servant of that bhakt. And what is the response of the bhakt? Dure tishtham. Get out. He says, ah, you're the most dangerous of all the servants. If I get attached to you, my bliss of bhakti will be finished forever. No, 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 you're way too dangerous for me. Get away. Go dure tishtham. Get far away from me. Go back to your Swami. Serve him. I don't want your service. Diyamanam nagrihananti, Shri Krishna says, even if I try to give mukti to my devotee, he won't take it. Mukti kahe gopalate, meri mukti bataya. Mukti goes to Shri Krishna and says, we are mukti. There's actually five kinds of mukti. We are mukti. We give liberation to others, yet we are coming to you asking for our liberation. Krishna says, how can you need liberation? Say, yes, your bhaktas won't accept us. Everywhere we go, they scold us, they kick us out, tell us to get lost. Please tell us. What can we do? Tell us how we can gain liberation. So you see, liberation compared to bhakti is a very low thing. If you get bhakti, the divine state of bhakti, liberation is nothing. It comes automatically. You will never be born in Maya again. You will be free from all Mayic suffering. But you don't have to ask for it. If that's all you ask for, that's all you'll get. So leave mukti aside. Let Shri Krishna worry about mukti. You ask him for the best thing, the key that opens everything. Mukti is a servant of Shri Krishna. So if Shri Krishna becomes your servant, what to care for mukti? Mukti will come along automatically. Bhakti is the key to the vault. If you just ask for $1 million, but there were $100 trillion in the vault, you only asked for $1 million, that's all you got. Better just ask for the key, right? Bhakti is the key. You get the key, you get everything. Bhagwan himself becomes yours. Then what could be left out? There's nothing left. So this is the secret of bhakti, that divine bhakti. Thus we understand now that we should not ask God for bhakti or mukti. We should only desire his bhakti. This is called selfless devotion. Even though there's still a desire to receive his bhakti, but it's not considered a selfish desire in the same way as asking for worldly things or even as asking for mukti. The desire for mukti is also considered to be a selfish desire. But if you ask for bhakti, if you ask for his divine love, this is not the same kind of selfish. However, you could even rise to a higher level. We'll talk about it more a couple days from now. An even higher level would be desiring to receive that divine bhakti so that you could do service to Shri Krishna to make him happy. That's the topmost level of selflessness, of nishkamta. But for now, it's just enough to understand. Don't ask for bhukti or mukti, just ask for bhakti. We'll discuss this further nuance as we go further into the philosophy. Now, we're looking at the conditions of bhakti. What are some of the things that you should follow in order to be successful on this path of devotion? We started with a verse from Bhaktirasamrit Sindhu that said, Anya abhilashita shunyam. Leave all other desires. Anya means other. So it must mean you can keep one desire, right? Yes, that one desire for bhakti. But leave all the other desires of bhukti and mukti. The second thing he says is, jnana karmadya navritam. The same thing is said in the Bhagavatam with the word avyavahit. Bhakti should be avyavahit. It means without any kind of covering of other practices or paths. Bhakti is independent, supreme. Bhakti svatantra sakala sukhakani. You don't have to supplement bhakti with any other practice. The goal of doing bhakti is the supreme goal. And bhakti is the only way to reach God. There's no other way. Bhakti revainam nayati. Veda says, bhakti is the only way. In the Bhagavatam, Shri Krishna says, bhaktyahamekaya grahya. I am only attainable through bhakti. What this means is, if someone has understood this goal, I want to attain his divine love. And I will attain that divine love by practicing sadhana bhakti. Then you don't have to worry. See, some people think, do I also have to practice some kind of yoga in order to awaken my kundalini? It's a common question people have because it's another spiritual practice, right? There are can go to so many yoga studios right here in Manhattan and learn some kind of meditation that's supposed to awaken your kundalini and it starts arising up your spine. So do I have to do that as well? Do I also have to meditate on Aham Brahmasmi or Om or something like that? These are all spiritual practices which are described at various places in our scriptures. But they are not supplemental to the path of bhakti. Bhakti is supreme and independent. You just have to remember, my goal is that divine prem, and the only thing I have to do to get that is practice bhakti. Everything else is under that. I'm going to make God mine. And once I've done that, do I need to worry about kundalini? No. So you worry about making God yours through bhakti. That's it. So Rup Goswami says, true bhakti, if you want the best effect of bhakti, then practice pure bhakti without the affiliation of any other kind of practice. Another way you could say it is that bhakti is strong enough on its own. You don't have to add anything else. If you want to do some yoga asanas for the good health of your physical body, it's a great idea. It's very good for that. But that isn't an integral part of attaining your divine goal. It may be necessary or very helpful in maintaining your physical health, which is also important. But don't think that bhakti is depending on that practice. Even within the path of sadhana bhakti, there are two styles of doing sadhana bhakti. There's raganuga bhakti and there's vaidhi bhakti. Raganuga bhakti and vaidhi bhakti. Vaidhi bhakti means according to the vidhi and nishedh of the Vedas, the do's and don'ts of the Vedas. There's lots of do's and don'ts for upasana described in Vedas. Get up at this time in the morning, have a ritual bath in this way, wear these kind of clothes, come and sit at this time facing this way, offer this particular thing to God, say this particular mantra, do this kind of pranayam. Rules for devotion. And they're very strict. This vaidhi bhakti, if you follow it, it takes a lot of effort to follow all those do's and don'ts. It's a very formal way of worshiping. So this is vaidhi bhakti. Raganuga bhakti means simply attaching your mind to God, lovingly remembering God with the goal of attaining His divine love. And there's no other do or don't. The do's and don'ts on the path of Raganuga Bhakti are very simple. Just as long as your mind is absorbed in remembering Radha and Krishna, you're doing Raganuga Bhakti exactly right. Doesn't matter where you're sitting. In Vaidhi Bhakti, you can't sit just anywhere. You have to prepare a proper place. That place must be pure. Has to have a certain cloth for you to sit on. You have to be sitting a certain way at a certain time of day. In Raganuga Bhakti, you can sit anywhere, anytime, be wearing anything, be physically clean, be physically unclean. It makes no difference. The only thing that matters is your mind in Radha and Krishna or not? If it is, if you're lovingly remembering Radha and Krishna, you are doing bhakti. This is called Raganuga bhakti. And on the other hand, in Vaidhi bhakti, it's not just about where your mind is. You also have to observe all the other formalities, all the rules. What Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj taught is Raganuga Bhakti. He taught Raganuga Bhakti as a means of practicing devotion to attain Sri Krishna's Premanand. Raganuga Bhakti is not done out of fear. It's done out of desire. Desire for what? Desire to attain Radha Krishna. Desire to receive their divine bhakti. Vaidhi bhakti has some fear involved. That you have to do this. If you don't, you should feel guilty. If you don't do it correctly, it could be considered a sin. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, there's a fear. There's like a, God could punish me if I don't worship Him properly. That kind of feeling is there in Vaidhi Bhakti. So Raganuga Bhakti, you can say, is for the one who only wants to attain God's divine love. That's it. Vaidhi Bhakti is also a perfectly valid way of worshiping God. But you can say a person who's reached the point where he feels that Shri Krishna is my own, I just want to attach my mind to him and love him, then he's gone beyond the formalities. The formalities were all a preliminary thing. So we have to practice sadhana bhakti. That sadhana bhakti can be done in one of two ways, either vaidhi bhakti or raganuga bhakti. But if your goal is that ultimate divine love, then you don't have to fear Shri Krishna. You can just consider him to be your own, and you can love him through the path of raganuga bhakti. In order to do this, there has to be a way to bring him closer to you. God is very far from us, right? Even though he's omnipresent, God is supreme, and we are just insignificant souls. So how can we love him? Saints have said there are five ways, five different styles of loving God that you can adopt that will bring you right up close to God. This is the means of practicing raganuga bhakti. You have to adopt one of these ways. So the next condition, as stated by Rup Goswami, is anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktiruktama. Anukulyena krishnanushilanam. You have to adopt some kind of loving, positive relationship in your heart with Shri Krishna so that you feel closer to him. So, saints, as I said, have described five ways of loving Shri Krishna that you can adopt on this path of devotion to God. So you will have to choose which one fits you the best, and then you can adopt that way of thinking about Shri Krishna and progress further on the path. So what are these five ways? I'll tell you tomorrow. Bolie Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.